Welcome once again, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast. John Manuel and Matt Eddy joining you again from the Baseball America podcast nook. The World Series is over, Matt, and neither one of us picked it correctly.
No.
We both picked the Rays, and congratulations, obviously, go out to the Philadelphia Phillies. Phils in five. I don't know many people who had that, but I think the one thing that was clear out of this World Series, Matt, is that at this time of year, the Phillies were the better team, whether it was experience, whether it was their stars getting it done, whether it was their bullpen being just a hair better, especially at the end. The Phillies were the better team. They played better. They deserved it. You lose three games the entire postseason. There's nothing fluky about that. The Phillies were the hottest, best team in the Major League postseason this year.
Yeah, you wonder what would have happened, though, had the Rays persevered in that Game 3 where they were tied 4-4.
Right.
But then the Grant Balfour's blow up in the ninth, and I think that kind of sealed the Rays in this series.
It did kind of seal it. No, you're right. That was the decisive game, and a lot of times, I mean, obviously the Phillies come right out and get the momentum in the series by winning Game 1 behind Cole Hamels, the eventual MVP. Tampa fights back, wins Game 2. But Game 3, it's always a crucial game when you're 1-1 like that. So it's just such a difference being up 2-1 than being down. And the Rays certainly had their chances. And I think a lot of discussions being had around the country about this World Series and quality of it, where it ranks and all that kind of stuff. And I think the bottom line of it is the reason it didn't rate well or these kind of things was getting panned. The weather certainly didn't help. The bottom line is the first four and a half games really weren't too well played, I didn't think. I didn't think it was baseball at its best. Last night's game, or the championship game, the fifth game, the last three innings of Game 5, I'll get it out here sooner than later. That was crisply played, well pitched. It was good hitting. Yeah, Rocco Baldelli's solo home run, that was a great piece of hitting.
Yep.
Which Tim McCarver and Joe Buck could not come close to describing, you know, what he did well. To be able to pull a ball that's riding in on you like that,
right,
not just hit it with a fat part of the bat, when you have Rocco Baldelli's 80 regular season at-bats, the rust, his medical condition. That was an unbelievable piece of hitting by Rocco Baldelli, and it just, all we got out of Tim McCarver was, well, usually you want to stay away, so they have to hit the home run away. It's like, thanks a lot, old man. Go the heck back to Memphis and give this up.
Wow.
But, that was just terrible. That was brutal. I would rather have had Charles Barkley on than Tim McCarver in that instance. But the only people who weren't on top of their games in Game 5, the resumption of Game 5, were McCarver and Buck. The first four-plus games, I don't think either team was on at its best, nor were the umpires.
No.
That's why I think the series didn't have a whole lot of momentum, it seemed like. Never seemed like it generated any momentum. I don't know if you thought it was as big of a dud as the national media did.
Well, all the games were competitive except for the one blowout, the Game 4, 10-2 Philly. You know, some really bad calls on the bases, some very questionable ball and strike calls, you know, in my opinion.
Which happens a lot, but this year seemed much worse than normal.
I think from my perspective, it seemed lopsided. I think more of the ball and strike calls went in favor of Philadelphia.
I don't disagree with you.
Maybe that's just my misperception, but that's just.
And that's a stat that needs the corners and need the general strike zone. Moyer, Blanton, guys who can't overpower you. And whether it was a conscious thing or not, I don't think it is. I don't think the umpires are ever biased like that myself. But bigger strike zones, generous strike zone calls really helps guys who don't have overpowering stuff. And the Rays don't need a big strike zone. They have power arms. And nothing worked out the way that you thought it would work out in that series. That said, it is kind of amazing how everyone thought, like, oh, Joe Blanton, he's going to get drilled. I mean, it's Blanton versus Andy Sonnenstein. I mean, I like Andy Sonnenstein, but let's face it, Joe Blanton was supposed to be better than Andy Sonnenstein. He was better. You know, Jamie Moyer, I did say at the beginning of the playoffs, I think people were giving Jamie Moyer way too little respect. He had a great year this year for a 45-year-old, a good year for any major league pitcher. Probably the best 45-year-old season by a pitcher ever. And I realize it's a small sample size, but
well, his getting rocked in the playoffs previously, I think, fed into that.
I think so, but I guess my point is, I never thought he's not going to get rocked every time out. I don't think so. I just think the guy was too good this year to get handled every single time out. And I think the other part that people are going to criticize when you want to be critical in this series is Joe Maddon and some of the moves he made for the Rays throughout the series, but specifically in the resumption of Game 5 and I don't, you know, the whole weather thing, the whole weather controversy, it's easy to pile on Bud Selig. I don't think baseball really could have done a whole lot differently in that scenario. But what do you think of Joe Maddon? Do you think Joe Maddon blundered with his handling of the bullpen throughout the series, or just Game 5? Or do you think you can pin the loss in this series on Joe Maddon?
No, I don't think so. Not in this case. You wonder how much experience he has managing in the National League under the National League rules, given what we saw last night.
I think you're right.
The Howell at bat in particular.
Correct.
You know, you do have guys on the bench who can hit, who can bunt if you want. You probably wouldn't bunt if you brought in a pinch hitter.
You have several switch hitters.
You have several. Willie Ibar was not in the game, I believe.
No, he was not.
You had five relievers left over. I think you can sacrifice J.P. Howell there in that situation.
I think you can, and also the big thing is if you have enough faith in J.P. Howell to leave him in that situation, then you leave him in even after he gives up the double near homer to Pat Burrell.
Yep.
So that was very odd. And then if you wanted to have a lefty there and you want to have someone who you could go more than one or two batters with, you should have gone to David Price probably. So I thought that's why we had an off-air discussion before the series where I really was surprised that people were maybe giving an edge. Some people were giving an edge to the Rays' bullpen. I thought it did play out over the series. The Phillies' bullpen was the better bullpen. I think the number one reason the Phillies won the World Series this year is they were so good out of the bullpen all year. That's the biggest difference between them and the Mets. Brad Lidge was the biggest difference between those two teams. And the confidence that you have when you have a bullpen that's that good, I just think that that is what the Phillies fed off of. And I think Charlie Manuel also deserves credit. He dictated the matchups in Game 5. Specifically, in the resumption of that game especially. And while Pedro Feliz basically is not a good major league player, he would rather have Feliz versus Bradford rather than Dobbs or Stairs or anybody else versus Price. With the game on the line, with a tying run, potential winning run at third base, he wanted to take his chances with Chad Bradford, not David Price.
Right.
And that was a really smart move, and I thought that was the thing. It's not that it's so much logical, because when it first was happening, I was like, I can't believe he's going to let Pedro Feliz hit in this situation. But he dictated the situation, and that's where I just think he deserves kudos for doing that, whereas Joe Maddon kind of let the situations dictate what he did. And I think you have to be the man in control, and I think Charlie Manuel was.
Yeah, it looked a lot like Maddon was almost learning on the job, almost, you know, and for a third-year manager, that's...
That's a problem. He did learn from his mistakes, I think, in the Red Sox series in Game 5. He learned in Game 7 and went to Price. But then, like he said, it was like a whole new learning curve in the National League rules, and he didn't necessarily handle it very well. But obviously a great season for both clubs. I mean, huge kudos for the Rays for winning 97 regular season games, eight more in the postseason, I should say. I mean, 105 wins for the Tampa Bay Rays. That's like two seasons worth earlier in their history.
Yeah, we haven't even talked about Cole Hamels, you know, the phenomenal season he had pitching.
Phenomenal!
Coming into the year, it was what he had to prove is that he could hold up for a whole season and be that ace. And he did an absolute spades
this year. I mean, unbelievable.
Five strong playoff starts on top of a close to Cy Young caliber season.
And I was reading, actually, this morning, I was actually reading, because I'm doing a Phillies top 30 this offseason, I was reading 2 years ago Phillies top 30, just breezing through it, making sure, taking some notes on players who might have come and gone. And I was actually reading the overview from that year, and it was 06 when Pat Gillick really rolled the dice, traded away Corey Lytle and especially Bob Abreu to the Yankees, really for pennies on the dollar. And that trade really is what started the Phillies toward this World Series championship. They got rid of Abreu. Their clubhouse came together. They played with more energy after that. Obviously, Bob Abreu is a productive player, but he didn't fit with the Phillies. They weren't winning with Bob Abreu. And, boy, Jason Worth had a great series in some ways. A couple base running gaffes here or there, but a couple flailing defensive plays I remember at the wall. But, you know, he was a better fit. Jason Worth's a better fit. Shane Victorino playing. Better fit. Yeah, they gave up Aaron Rowan. They lost him in free agency, but Shane Victorino fit this team. They could have played Greg Dalsmore, but you know, Pedro Feliz is a really good defensive third baseman,
right.
And especially with a left-handed pitching, they have Moyer. You can't tell me having Feliz over there didn't help Jamie Moyer have the kind of year he had. So
yep.
I really think the Phillies were just a well-thought-out team, a team that played with energy. Certainly not a perfect team. Certainly a team with some flaws, but you know, in 06, they traded Abreu. They made a run at the division at the Mets. They were kind of far behind there. They made a run, just fell short of the wild card in 06. Finished so strong and won the division in 07. Finished strong again this year in 08. I think Charlie Manuel deserves a lot of credit. Pat Gillick what a way to go out as a general manager if indeed he does step down, for sure.
It was
sounds like he is.
The fourth team he's taken to the playoffs, correct?
Fourth franchise he's taken to the playoffs. And the third World Series is one second team. That's what a World Series. So his resume is two Blue Jays World Series championships, Baltimore as a getting into championship series, Seattle,
the best Mariners teams ever.
Best Mariners teams ever in a 116-win season in 2001. And, yeah, you can make the point that some of those teams, those franchises did collapse after he left. But, honestly, I mean, while he was there, they all did pretty well. And now the Phillies won a World Series, only the second time in their history. So, Pat Gillick, championship player in college at Southern California, championship general manager. That guy's career in baseball is right up there. It's almost unparalleled. His accomplishments. So.
Going back to what you said about Abreu, it's interesting that the Phillies were the perennial underachievers in the years 01 through 06
at
the point they traded Abreu.
They were like,
and what have they been the last 2 years?
Overachievers.
Significant overachievers.
Absolutely. They were like the Astros of the 90s, where the Astros were like always like where they had that run of like finishing second 5-6 years in a row. And I think the Phillies finished between 80 and 86 wins. 80 and 87 wins, 80 and 88 wins, for like six straight years.
They've been in the race, on the fringe of the race, every year.
Basically,
but
the Blue Jays.
But not pushed through.
Been like the Blue Jays have been in the last decade with 1 or 2 years of where the Blue Jays might have bottomed out. But the Blue Jays are always between 80 and 90 wins, always threatening the playoffs. The Phillies able to break through the last couple of years. The Blue Jays have not been able to.
With an assist by the Mets.
That that was an unspoken part of that I was leaving out, but you are correct, sir. Yes. So. So the Phillies, just amazing just how also they're really, in some ways, more homegrown than the Rays. You know, with Utley, their best player. I mean, Chase Utley, phenomenal year. Don't understand how the Fielding Bible scores him a plus 47, but gives its Fielding Bible award at second base to Brandon Phillips at plus 17. I saw that press release
today. I didn't see that, no.
But they did that, and that boggles the mind. So I don't quite understand that methodology. But Chase Utley, phenomenal player. Ryan Howard, a flawed player, but he's almost guaranteed to finish first or second in the National League in home runs every year if he's healthy. Jimmy Rollins has a bad year, but still leads this team. Worth, Victorino, Pat Burrell goes 0-for-13 in the World Series in his last at bat, near home run, double that ends up scoring the winning run. So,
yep.
A lot of home runs. You mentioned Hamels, Brett Myers, Ryan Madsen, a lot of very crucial homegrown players. And even Shane Victorino, certainly not homegrown, but his first year in the organization was spent in the International League with the Phillies in Scranton. He was IL MVP. So they did, I think, have something of a hand in developing him as well. So just amazing story for the Philadelphia Phillies, and I'm happy for Jason Stark and a lot of other Philly fans. Chris Klein.
They're kind of like the Royals. You know, they have a lot of fans in the national media for some reason.
It's strange. I think because a lot of those guys grew up in the 70s when the Phillies and Royals were significantly relevant. So
it was the Mike Schmidt-George Brett rivalry.
There's that as well. So it's the Baseball America podcast. I'm John. He's Matt. Wrapping up the postseason. Now we're going to talk a little Arizona Fall League, Hawaii Winter Baseball. We're kind of shifting into prospect season here, Matt. You're working on three top 30s. I'm working on three top 30s. So we'll definitely talk about those next week on BaseballAmerica.com. We start posting American League East top 10 prospects. So I'm sure that Will Lingo and I will do a podcast. He did the Orioles. I did the Junkies. You start when with the Mariners?
Oh, the Blue Jays.
Oh, good grief. I forgot about the Blue Jays.
Good grief.
We really just talk about Yankees and Blue Jays, but we'll do that next week. We might even have a podcast extra for you. But I like looking already. I even had to reference the Fall League already in my Yankees top 10 because Austin Jackson certainly going to factor into the Yankees top 10. Off to a good start. Talked to a scout out there who likes what he sees out of Austin Jackson. But really, Matt, I mean, like, how much stock when you're ranking a top 30 or a top 10 do you make of how much stock do you put into performance in the Fall League?
In the Arizona Fall League in particular, it's very conducive to hitting, the environment is, so that, you know, the hitting numbers, you certainly don't like to see a guy go there and fall on his face.
Right.
But at the same time, the power numbers, you know, you have to take it with a grain of salt, as they say. For pitchers, and then on the flip side, you would think it would be a great sign for pitchers, but they're only going 3 innings. So that's
right.
The flip side. It doesn't prove anything about their ability to go through a lineup twice or to get to their secondary stuff, necessarily.
A lot of guys go out there and it's glorified instructional league, basically. They're working on a pitch. You know, last year, Nick Blackburn specifically went out there told throw more breaking balls, throw more curveballs, throw more changeups. It really was finishing school for him, and his performance, it wasn't so much that he performed well, although he did. It was the fact that his performance actually did really influence my rankings last year with the Twins, because he finished so strong. He pitched in the championship game. It was like his 180th inning. He was still up to 90-93 and touching a four in that game. So that was an instance that was an outlier for me, where his folly performance really did influence my rankings. For the most part, though, you have to talk about scouting reports, and you really can't talk about, I think, performance. That said, there is Tommy Hansen, whose scouting reports and performance are matching up right now in the Fall League. He's probably the biggest story of the Fall League right now. 14 strikeouts in his first 8 2/3 innings. One hit allowed for the Braves right-hander. Plus, he's in the news because of the Jake Peavy trade talks. Braves on that they're not going to give up Tommy Hansen. And I'll throw in a little trivia. He's an ABD Bulldogs alumnus, and the ABD Bulldogs just won the Boardwood Bat Association Championship in Jupiter last weekend. So Tommy Hansen, Nick Noonan, Josh Vitters, Chris Parmalee, a few of your current minor league alumni, and your big league alumni. Can you name the big league alumnus, Matt, who once attended Long Beach State, who was just won a World Series ring, who would play for ABD Bulldogs from age 13 to 18?
Just won a World Series ring this year?
Yeah, that's right.
So we're looking for a Philly from Long Beach State?
Yeah, that's right. And he also attended another
Andrew
school.
Andrew Carpenter?
No, but he also attended another college as well. He attended three colleges, one junior and two four
Eric
years.
Bruntlett? I don't know.
No, he went to Stanford. This would be Greg Dobbs. Okay. Greg Dobbs, an ABD Bulldogs alumnus. And the only other big leaguer played for ABD Bulldogs, James Parr. The correct answer is James Parr. So welcome to trivia here at BaseballAmerica.com. But Matt, I mean, Danny Murphy's a guy who went to the Fall League specifically. Like you said, you noticed the numbers, and he was hitting .400 while healthy. But I guess the real thing that people were following with Danny Murphy, or Daniel Murphy, Daniel, to his friends and family, was can he play second base? How much do you think you can even judge Danny Murphy playing second base with the infields out there, and that kind of limited a look?
That's a good point. I guess he talks about – he has a blog, actually, on one of our competitor sites, and he talks about –
yeah, minorleaguebaseball.com. That's okay. We can name it.
And he talks about the coaching staff working with him, so maybe getting different viewpoints on playing second base could help the transition, or maybe it'll just confuse him, but it could be a factor.
I like the idea of going to a fall league like that, where the level of play is faster than it would be in instructional league to make a position change like that.
True.
He did try that in AA in the Eastern League. The reports I got on it were not so great. That was not – it was a Danny Murphy probably lacks the agility to play second base every day in the big leagues, but if he can do it a little bit, if he's like a Tony Phillips kind of – well, not Tony Phillips, but if he's a super utility guy who can spell David Wright from time to time at third base, play some first base when Carlos Delgado needs a day off, play some left field, and on the occasion play second base so you don't have to play Arjenis Reyes, or you don't have to – you aren't crippled when 36-year-old or 38-year-old Damian Easley goes down with an injury, then Daniel Murphy has some real value to a major league team. He's a 400 at-bat guy. That guy would be pretty good, I think.
Yeah, a full season on the corners, it makes all kinds of sense until a position opens up for him full time, until they determine what that position is.
Right, right. You know? Yeah, where is that position? That's a good question too. And the Fall League, used to almost stand alone, but I got to be honest with you. I look at the Hawaii Winter Baseball. I'm almost more interested in what's going on in Hawaii Winter Baseball. There are a lot of big names out there. Yonder Alonso, Buster Posey, two 2008 first-rounders. I had this great scouting report. I thought of two scouts who've actually been to Hawaii. But, 97 miles an hour, first pitch by Andrew Brackman in the Hawaii Winter Baseball season is thrown by New York's, the Yankees' 2007 first-round pick, and it's 97. Here's a guy who hasn't thrown a pitch in anger in a competitive game. It's May of 07. Imagine that. He's had Tommy John surgery, an appendectomy, signed this giant contract, all this rehab, comes out and blows 97 on his first pitch.
That's awesome.
That would be a pretty nice feeling, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
If you could sit out all that time and blow 97 your first pitch, I mean,
if I could touch 77, I'd be impressed.
That's how I feel about it. I mean, but you got Todd Frazier out there having a great year. You got Roger Konchak, or as I call him around here, Roger Kieschnick, making his pro debut basically for the Giants. That's an interesting – that's a show. Hawaii Winter Baseball's pretty interesting. I don't know that it's as good as the Fall League yet, but it's pretty interesting.
It's fun because the first and second year guys for the most part, and those guys are easier to dream on. Let's be honest. It's not double A and triple A guys who have the warts exposed.
That's a great way to put it. They have these guys. Ryan Kalish, you can still dream on Ryan Kalish. He's had some injuries. He's had some trouble in his pro career so far, but he's shown you glimpses, and now he's showing you some more glimpses in the fall league. He's already got, I mean, in winter baseball, he's already got 10 steals. Plus, I like the fact that these guys are all getting exposed to some Japanese players. Again, it's a little taste of some of the international flavor. And then we just had our correspondent in Hawaii, Stacy Kaneshiro, who wrote a really neat article about some mid-season additions in Hawaii winter baseball, which include Kyle Drabek coming off Tommy John surgery, goes from instructional league to Hawaii. He's throwing 94-96 out there. That's nothing but good news this month for the Phillies. You got Brett Hunter, who missed a lot of the spring with Pepperdine, came back late, signed for $1 million with the A's. He's out there in Hawaii winter baseball making up for some lost time. And then you have Adam Loewen, moved off a 40-man roster by the Orioles. They were going to try to re-sign him. The Blue Jays signed him instead, one Canadian to another. And they've sent Adam Loewen to Hawaii winter baseball to get a little bit more, a few more bats in so they can evaluate him as a hitter. Pretty fascinating, I think, deal for some of the roster guys out in Hawaii winter baseball right now.
Definitely. Is Loewen playing first base or outfield? Or
I haven't seen a position on Adam Loewen out there. I just know that our writer talked to him, Stacy talked to him, about the process of, you know, why didn't you re-sign with that team, with your original club? And he just said, you know, the Blue Jays instantly talked to me, and he was really interested, and he was listening. He just had one at-bat so far, and it was obvious it was a pinch hitter because there's no position listed. But, you know, why not if you're the Blue Jays? So I think it's a smart move for them. And in one day, you had a very consequential 2002 draft for the World Series. You had B.J. Upton, Scott Kazmir, and Cole Hamels all from that draft. But you also had Brian Bullington, your number one overall pick, and Adam Loewen, your number four, both go to the Blue Jays on the same day.
Yep.
On a waiver claim and then on a,
and that year,
a free agent signing.
And is that the year they took Russ Adams in the draft?
I believe it is.
Which of those three would you rather have at this point in time?
Russ Adams, Adam Loewen, or Brian
Bullington?
I'd take my chances with Russ Adams. Yeah. I'd move Russ Adams to second base and see if it could somehow magically come back.
We were talking before the podcast about some of your personal favorite pitchers in the HWB. Would you care to expound on them?
I do. I have a couple Hawaii winter baseball guys. I respect the Lewis Clark State program up in Idaho quite a bit. NAIA superpower. They have 15 championships in the last 23 years. But Chris Kissock is a slender, quick-armed right-hander. I believe he's in the Phillies organization. He's pitching well out in Hawaii winter baseball right now. Only 4 hits allowed in 15 innings and 15 strikeouts. And, you know, touch of 91, but mostly just the competitiveness of this guy. And there was always a thought of projection. He was listed at 6'3", 160 at Lewis Clark State. So always some thought that if this guy got some meat on his bones, the 90 and 91 that he would touch would be where he'd sit. Always had life on the fastball. Always showed a quick wrist and the ability to spin a breaking ball. And then Kyle Bloom is a lefty. Older guy in the Pirates organization, but a guy who really made progress in the second half of this season, according to his manager, Tim Leeper, who's no longer with the organization. But Leeper said they made an adjustment with Kyle Bloom where they took the hesitation. He had a pause in his delivery. They eliminated that, and that quickened his arm. Fastball velocity got up to 92. You know, sitting more in the 88-90 range, which is solid average for a lefty as opposed to fringe or below, which he used to. And the crispness of his pitches increased. And again, he's performing out there. It's a pitcher's league, but 21 strikeouts in 20 innings, 11 hits allowed. Kyle Bloom's a lefty, and you're going to keep giving those guys chances. And right now, it sounds like he's gone from a guy with 3 fringy pitches to a guy with 3 average pitches, and that's a guy who's got a chance. So, yeah, I like him.
Yep.
Yes, sir. I like him. I like him a lot. Who are your personal cheese balls in Arizona Fall League or Hawaii Winter Baseball before we sign off?
Well, I've got to bring up Brad Emus.
Yeah, you do.
In Hawaii Winter Baseball. He's a name you might see him in the Blue Jays top 10, you know, just to throw that out there. But he was an 11th round pick in 07 out of
Tulane. Right?
Yeah, the Blue Jays drafted him with kind of a bum ankle. You know, he's fully recovered this year, and he put together a very solid season. And if you're looking for a best-case comp on him, the name that comes up all the time is Ty Wigginton.
Nice.
Another personal cheese ball of this particular podcast.
That's right. I love Ty Wigginton.
Yeah, because, you know, he grinds out at bats. He's a right-handed batter. He's competent at second and third. He's not going to blow you away with his range. But mostly it's the offensive potential. I think he ranked 6th in the Florida State League in extra base hits during the season.
No, the thing is,
solid bat.
He was very highly regarded out of high school. He just really never came through like they hoped he would at Tulane. But I didn't even notice that Ruben Tejada is playing out in the Hawaii Winter Baseball for the Mets. And the Mets are going to push this guy until he can't take anymore. He's a 19-year-old who played a full season in the Florida State League. Nice playing in Hawaii Winter Baseball every day at shortstop. And you know, he's holding his own. He's
on the other side of the keystone of Greg Veloz, right?
He has been throughout his minor league career, and now he is again. And Greg Velez, 9 errors in 17 games and scuffling a bit with the bat. I do like Greg Velez, but I think Ruben Tejada's got a better, higher ceiling. So they're definitely guys to watch out there. And we will have a full Hawaii Winter Baseball top 20 prospects for you sooner than later, and we'll have Arizona Fall League prospects, of course, at the end of that. And if you go to baseballamerica.com and you go to the prospects blog right now, our own Kerry Buehler is out in Arizona Fall League, and he's already unearthed such gems as Wes Hodges had a tired arm, had a DH a game or two, or Sean West, who had a blister issue that he alleviated by urinating on his hands daily for a week. Blister be gone.
It's a proven method.
It is a proven method. It works better than the blister remedies that Josh Beckett used to use. And Moithe, we know that he prefers that method as well. So
no doubt.
Sean West toughening up on the Fall League. So.
And also the breakout, Astros breakout second baseman, Drew Sutton.
That's right.
Learning a thing or two from his golf swing and translating that into the baseball realm.
That's why we hired Kerry. He's got good stuff on the prospects blog on the Arizona Fall League, so check that out. So anything else in the Fall League or Winter Baseball for you, Matt? I'm also done. I'm going to go pick up my kids. We'll have more on the next Baseball America podcast. I think next week we probably should go ahead and have a little AL East roundtable with me and Will Linger at the very least.
Sure.
Talking Jay Orioles and the New York Junkies, as I have done them. This is my 5th year doing the Junkies now. So
wow, congratulations.
I know. I don't think there's anybody who's ranked all 5 years. It's a complete turnover in the Junkies top 30.
That's good.
It's not bad. It's not bad at all. I could have ranked, I think Reggie Corona could have been in all 5 if I'd really wanted to. No, not Reggie Corona. Marcos Vecchionacci probably,
yes.
Or Eric Duncan. I think Vecchionacci has been best
infield arm.
Cervelli's
been in the system for a while, too, has he not?
He has. But I think Vecchionacci has been best infield arm for the 5 years I've done the list. So there you go. Until next time, he's Matt, I'm John. We'll see you next time on the Baseball America podcast. So long, everybody.